Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. I almost always start out by saying something like, if you receive our promotional message every starting Thursday nights and Saturdays and Sundays, and where we tell you what the show is going to be about and everything that's supposedly going to happen. And this week is no different. But this week is a little special in that I specifically come out and ask a question. And for those who don't get our promotion, because you don't get us on Facebook, either going to my personal page or the War Report or the other places that we advertise what the show, this week's show, is going to be about. Let me give you a little catching up here. This week, I'm asking a question, very complex, very important question, and the question is, what if we had a shared vision and mission for public education, actually from pre-K to PhD. Let that sit in for a moment. What if we had a shared vision and mission for public education, pre-K to PhD? Now, for those of you who may not know, vision, what a vision is. Most, I guess I'm hesitating here because you don't just have a vision. You usually have a vision, and a vision is your idea of something you want to materialize in the future. Usually, I won't say all the time, but a vision statement is basically your conception of where your idea or your project, whatever it is going to be like when it matures sometime in the future. It usually goes something like this. You have a vision statement. You have a mission statement, then you have a goal statement, a strategy statement. Most people are probably more familiar with the mission statement. But what maybe you don't realize is that the mission statement comes out of the vision statement. The vision statement gives rise to your mission. Then your mission spells out your goals. Then the goals, after the goals, your strategy is how you're going to achieve these goals. The mission is, these are the steps that we're going to take, or we need to take, we believe we need to take, to turn our vision into reality. Okay, so that's what I meant by when I said, what if we had a shared vision and mission statement for public education? We don't have that. I'm not sure we ever had a shared vision or mission for public education. When you go back to even before Horace Mann, go back to the 1500s, the 1600s, and I've taken us back there on various shows, especially when I was talking about the development of colleges and universities back in as far as the 14th, 15th, 16th century, 17th century, 18th century, where someone had some kind of vision for establishing a university. When we come up and start talking about public education, we always go back to Horace Mann and his efforts to bring public education into existence. By that meaning, having an education system whereby children could go to a place and get some kind of organized education, and the bottom line being is that the state would pay for it. We had, I say we, the country had education in the past, from the arrival from the 1600s into the 1700s, that was piecemeal. You know this. Only the wealthy had tutors come in to educate their children, or they sent their children back to Europe for education, whereas most of the population in, quote, the new America was ignorant in that sense. Very few people had, quote, what we talk about today, literacy, and could read and write, do math. When Horace Mann comes along and wants to organize this, a system that the state, would be the local township or cities if they had them then, and to any extent, or the state government, the public would pay for this education, hence we call it public education, of course. But what was his vision? I don't recall anyone laying out his vision when they were talking about Horace Mann and his push for the common school, what we now call public education. I don't recall when we, in the earlier part of this show, back in year one, year two, when I talked about the history of public education and the various social movements, or actually reform movements, and what they were all about. Again, this notion of vision didn't come into play. And so here we are, 2018, and I'm asking the question of, what if we had a shared vision and mission for public education, all the way from pre-K to PhD? And basically, I'm asking you to think, if we had said vision, I'm not defining that vision at this point, but if we had said vision, I'm saying, then take it further. And what would be the impact on our public education schools or systems if we had a shared vision? In the background of all of this, I'm basically saying we don't have a vision, or at least a shared vision. And because we don't have a shared vision, one that we are willing to fight for, live and die for, we're vulnerable and have been vulnerable. And as a result of our vulnerability, people who have a shared vision and have implemented this via their mission, they have been able to tear us apart. us being the collective public education system of America. But not only America, but across the globe. Now, that's a big statement. And if I can get you to think about what I've said, and if you, again, if you got our promotion early and you had a chance to, you know, go through the promo itself and the questions that I raised in this promo and really start thinking about those questions, then I think maybe you'll see where I'm coming from as well as to possibly where I'm going here, is that we never had, in my opinion, in my studying of public school history, education history, we never, you know, other than some notion of Thomas Jefferson when he was talking about we needed an education, an educated public in order for this new democracy to survive and thrive. And if we didn't have, by implication, if we didn't have, then this new democracy would at some point cease being a democracy and become an oligarchy. Does it sound familiar? Like where we are now? And Benjamin Franklin, who talked about it and the need for an educated public, but they were talking pretty much about the need for universities. Not so much far as my reading of history, were they talking about universal public education. So they had a so like a clear vision that it is only through education that democracy can survive and thrive, because you have an educated citizenry who are capable of doing critical analysis, critical thinking, and arriving at what we as citizens should do in terms of who we vote for, what we would want from the people that we elect to go to various halls of Congress or state legislatures. That required an educated citizenry. Hence, there's maybe, you know, a little vision in here, but certainly a lot of mission. So that's sort of like my introduction to where we are. And I issued like an invitation for us to come together and imagine just how good our schools could be for our children, for teachers, our communities, if we had a vision that we created a shared vision and mission right now, and for the last 30 years plus, we have a vision that's being forced on us by what I call the neoliberals and their Machiavellian agenda. That's their vision, folks. And they're working it. They're working it like hell on us. And they're successful because we, the public, parents, the teachers, we have never, in my view, had our own shared vision. Look at our history. When we start talking about this education thing, it was only for men, white men of means, property, wealth. Not for women, white women, and certainly not for the slaves and the Native American population. That was a vision. That was the mission. And they worked it. Then we get a period of when, all right, maybe it should be okay to let women have some kind of education. Oh, but no, we're going to get their education is going to be learning how to be bookkeepers, secretaries, maybe better moms, but nothing like an education that will prepare them to become president of this country someday. Then the fight over whether or not, you know, slaves should be given opportunity for education. You see the fracturedness of the vision. It was never a vision where you and I and our ancestors got together and said, negotiated among ourselves in a democratic process that this is what I see our education systems should be 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down the line. And this is how we're going to get there. This is our mission, is to get there. And these are the goals that we want to achieve. And here are our strategies for achieving a goal so that the goals then bring the mission into fruition, which then becomes a materialization of our vision. We still don't do that. And going to race as a huge driver of almost everything that we do here in America, the notion of including slaves into the formula of getting an education, or being provided an education. Then the notion of what kind of education the slaves, former slaves, should get. It was certainly not to be the same type of education that white children of a period were to get. Different vision. Remember I talked about Booker T. Washington and his school, the Hampton Institute, where his notion of an education was to train the former slaves to be valuable as ex-slaves to the new social order that came about after the Civil War, to make these ex-slaves as valuable in this new order as they were in the old order. What we now talk about in terms of reproduction of white dominance over a minority population. We move up to after the Civil War, and we get into the Jim Crow period, which is kind of like just described. Then you get into the establishment of the Jim Crow laws, that separate but equal, in the decision Plessy versus Ferguson, where the Supreme Court at the time said that segregation was cool, as long as separate but equal. You can keep the races separate, and education, public accommodation, as long as you provide equally something of equal quality, which never happened. But that was the vision then, that, okay, we have to give education, but it could be X versus Y, not some unified notion of a quality education plan for everyone going forward. We get to the Supreme Court of 54 and the Brown versus Topeka, when they said that segregation was not cool and that children, black children, white children, Hispanic children, poor children should get an equal opportunity to get a quality education. That kind of a vision, maybe? Yeah, all right. If that was a vision, that's what it was. But that was not a unified, that was not a shared vision. That was not a vision that the people came together and fashioned and said, this is what we want going forward. This is what we want for our future. I don't know how many of you were, you know, adults or children during that the 60s, or actually the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, when across this country, cities, states fought like hell to maintain segregated schools, to maintain whatever that vision was at the time. I was shocked when I saw pictures of white women, mostly women, but men too, in Boston, carrying signs, yelling, screaming, trying to segregate the young black children coming into formerly all-white schools. I would say Boston because Boston has the image of it was one of the most liberal states, cities in the country. But when they started to desegregate the school, that lid was blown completely off. We saw what the people, now maybe not the majority, but certainly enough of the vocal minority, if they were not the majority, what their vision was. And we've been fighting that part of someone's vision forever. Now, having set that up, here's what I'm really trying to get us to. It's a challenge. And I'm saying, if throughout our history, our vision for education has been fashioned by other people, political, economic, religious, elite, and the people themselves, and certainly not the teachers, have not fashioned a vision. What if we, the people, and specifically the parents, the teachers, the admin, the people we elect for our school boards, and et cetera. What if we came together at some democratic forum and fashioned our own vision and mission for public education, pre-K to PhD? Let me say it again. What if we came together and created a shared vision and all the rest, you know, the mission, the goal, the strategies for our pre-K to PhD? What would it look like? What would it feel like? You know, those of us who are victims of the current war on public education, I would think we should be able to answer that question. I would think, and I would also hope, that we have thought about this at least ever since the war started 2002. And we're going on to 15, 16 years of this now. And as I have always said, even before that, going back to the 1980s and A Nation at Risk, and before that, back to Sputnik and on and on and on. But what if, is it even possible that we, what I refer to the last 4 years, the ed community, those of us who are the teachers, the parents, the students, could somehow come together and fashion our own vision. Can you imagine what that vision would be? And this is where I really would like if people were to call in and share some elements of what they think would make the vision. And let me just quickly give you that call-in number, if you're inclined. It's 888-627-6008. Let me give it again. 888-627-6008. So, what should our vision look like? And again, I'm talking about a participatory citizen action where us as citizens come together in a democratic process and hammer out our vision of what American public schools should look like, become, and becoming is the putting into action of the mission. We can say, this is what we want our public schools to become. This is what we want to work for. This is what we want to put our money in. This is what we want our schools to become in our lifetime, our children's lifetime, or whatever period of time that we want to put into play. Okay? So, what would it look like? What should it look like? And what if the vision could be determined by the schools, or, you know, the administrators, the teachers, the students, the parents, the community, and then the people that we elect to our state and federal government, and they would all participate in creating a shared, true democratic engagement for the public good. I sort of like said something in terms of, you know, my first part of a vision would be that we should educate our children from pre-K to PhD first in becoming democratic citizens who will be critically, skillfully aware and capable of participating in the thing that we call democracy. And that our schools should play a huge role in preparing our children as they go through the system to become educated citizens who participate in this thing that we call democracy. That's just a start. And when I said this thing we call democracy, I'm saying for the public good versus where we are now, the private good. That's just a start. I don't want to go too far in it because then I'm telling you what I think, what my vision is. And yes, I do have a vision. And yes, I've been working on this for I don't know how long. but I don't want to lay it out because I want you to think about this, and I want you, even if you wrote it down, send me a note, or if you call in, or whatever, I want to hear from you. I've raised the question, I put out the challenge, and I'm trying to explain it, but I want your democratic participation in forming this vision. I'm smiling here because I'm just imagining, trying to imagine what you guys are thinking in response to what I've been talking about. Let me go a little further, though. In this vision that we create, what would teacher preparation be like? Because, folks, your vision will most definitely impact your teaching, your teachers in the teaching profession. It will definitely impact how people are prepared to become teachers in your vision. At least it should. And think about this. We have seen one, this huge attack war on teachers. Teachers being blamed for the lack of achievement among students, right? Not looking at all the reasons why there's, quote, maybe this thing called lack of achievement. And we've taken that, they have taken that attack on teachers, not just while you're in your classroom, not just while you're at school, but they go all the way back and say that the way in which you were trained is also partly to blame for this. Hence, we see springing up different programs to train teachers to be better at educating our children, and that will be shown by what our test scores. So your vision will definite implication for as way back as your teacher prep. That's one thing you need to think about when you're, you know, fashioning your vision here. Then how teachers will teach. Then the curriculum. Folks, your vision shapes all of this. The pedagogy, school culture, all of this is shaped by your vision via the mission portion of implementing your vision. So if you got a haphazard vision, if you got an evil vision, it's going to flow downhill. And you need to be aware of this when you are sitting back and you're thinking, if you're a teacher, if you're a parent, even students, when you're thinking about what's been happening to you over the last 15 years and more, I'm saying right here, and I'm not stuttering or stammering, that you're seeing the vision materializing via the mission and how it all flows down eventually to the politics, the policies, the practices, and the people who are tasked with performing those. Teachers are tasked with educating according to the curriculum via the required pedagogy. Vision is huge, folks. don't underestimate the vision. Then other questions like, you know, what would teaching and learning experience be? You know, you have to tie those two together so that how you teach, well, of course, you know this, will impact how your students learn. But what maybe you don't know, and I'll keep saying this over and over, is that how you teach flows from someone's vision. I know teacher is saying, well, when I first started teaching maybe in the 90s, I could go in my room and close the door, you know, just let me teach. And I had the freedom to be as creative as I could be to try and get my students to learn. Now I don't have that. Now I have scripted lesson plans. I have a clock. I have a timetable that at 10:13 this coming Wednesday, I have to be here, whether or not my class is ready to be taken there. I have to be there because the mission that I've been handed says this is where you should be, and this is how you should get there, taking from you your quote vision of what you should do as a teacher responsible for preparing your students for whatever grade level you're teaching, for that grade level and for the next one. Then, you know, students, what would all this be like for your student? And this notion of school culture, if all the teachers and the administration in your building are working from someone else's vision, and that creates your culture of your school, which is very important. We talk about school climate. Basically, you should be talking about school culture. The values, the norms, the beliefs, the perceptions that operate within your school, that's your culture. But culture springs from, guess what? Vision, again. And we then move on to, what would teaching and learning be, that experience? And we move from there to, with our vision for public education, create an environment that promote positive youth development. That's where I didn't want to really come out at first. This is what I think that the education system from pre-K to PhD, its main value, and again, let me just say, this is coming from me, what I think and what my vision would be all about from my 74 years of being a student, then a teacher, a parent, a child of someone else, the whole nine yards. This is me. But I think it all comes down to, we should be so committed to, our vision should be so committed to our students coming out of a system that is dedicated to positive youth development. They come out with knowledge, yes. They come out with the ability to engage in critical thinking, yes. They come out with the ability to work collaborative with others to solve a problem, absolutely. they also come out in terms of what we talk about in terms of well-being. We should be so focused on our students coming out of our education system and their well-being, their surviving and thriving, their resiliency to deal with issues and personal issues and societal issues. This is what I'm talking about in terms of positive youth development. We should be focusing on making sure that all of our kids get exposed to a school culture, be it at the classroom level, the school level, be it after school, with their after school program, summer program. All of it should be that we, via our schools, are focusing on our children developing positive self-development capabilities. So when they go out into the world, they would be able to contribute to, in a positive way, a better world, not only for themselves and their kids, but for the rest of humanity. Yeah, that's my elements of my vision. But if we were in a room and we were trying to fashion a vision, a shared vision, that would be where I would want us to go. But in democracy, it would be that one person, one vote sort of thing. And whether or not it becomes a shared vision, I don't know. But this is what I would want, and this is what I would do. And that we need to create this environment that promotes this positive development for all children, all students, all youth, teenagers, young adults. And we should insist that we should be always, always aiming for their well-being, their democratic citizenship, and this lifelong engagement in our society, and with now the very, very fashionable lifelong learning. These are just elements. So, as I said at the top of the show, what is your vision? Do you have a vision? Have you ever had a vision? Even when, you know, that period of time when it was just, let me teach. Let me go into my room, close the door, don't bother me. Let me teach. Did you have a vision then? Was that a shared vision? Was it your individual vision? Today, when you, if you're a teacher or a parent, when you send your child to school at any level, what's your vision of what should be taking place in that school, in that classroom? And how, what is taking place in that school, in that classroom, how is it preparing your child in terms of his or her well-being in the future? That school, that classroom, are they promoting this positive youth development that I'm talking about? Is that part of their curriculum? Is it part of the pedagogy? Are you and the teacher and the school on the same page? And are you reading out of the same book? Which we see now where teachers are saying that, you know, parents are not supportive, and parents are saying that the teachers are not supportive. They're just interested in going to school, being there 5 hours, being off at Christmas in the spring, 5 days a week, 9 months of the year. That's all they care about. You know that argument and where it's come from. And you know the vision within said argument. So, if you do have a vision, is it shared? Is it shared with your colleagues? Or is it shared among the parents? Does your vision line up with the parents' vision? And the parents, your vision line up with your teacher's vision and the school that you send your kids to? And the kids, your well-being being looked after versus the well-being of the teachers, the well-being of the administration, the well-being of the school board, the well-being of the legislature, the well-being of the people who are pulling the strings all across the world, who are shaping our schools and telling them how to shape our kids to become workers, not thinkers. Telling states to then tell districts to narrow the curriculum, take out the arts, the liberal arts and humanities and history, civic courses, because those courses are broad courses. Those courses engage people to think, engage in emotions. They create memories of the past, the present, and possibly the future. You don't want that. You want worker bees today to come out of school being able to do nothing but coding and to become consumers. That's part of their vision. What does your vision look like compared to the dominant vision that's out there now and that had been out there for all this time? This thing that I'm talking about, vision, as I said or alluded to, it does shape public education at all levels. You know this. I'm going to say something. I just thought about this. When I told you that, you know, I graduated from high school at 16, and 2 months after I graduated, I signed up to go to the military, but I wasn't old enough. I had to wait until I was 17, and then I had to have my parents' signature. But I got that, and I went into the military and basic training. When I got to the base that we were going to be trained at, I mean, literally and figuratively, people, my vision of what was going to be my experience, and I was in the Air Force. When I met with the recruiters all the time, they gave me this beautiful vision of what my experience was going to be like. And I bought into it. When I left Detroit, we were on a train, and we picked up guys all across the country as we're going, heading towards Texas, San Antonio, Texas. It was 60 of us when we were all collected on this train. When we got off of the train, you know, everything was supposed to be in this rosy and good and what have you. I mean, the second we stepped off that train, we had two instructors who was, their job was to whip us into shape over the next 8 weeks. I talked about this to a young man last Saturday that I've been asked to help mentor, who wants to go into the military and all this other stuff. And he had this romantic idea and vision of it. And I shared with him my experience. And I think I may have said this in the past, but when we got off the train and the two instructors started yelling at us, I mean, like we were not human beings, more or less, and talking about us, calling us all kinds of names, and saying to us, you're the dumbest motherfuckers I've ever seen. How am I supposed to turn you into, you know, a soldier? What's your other left, you dumb motherfucker? And they finally get us in a line, and they tell us, in this man's military, shit flows downhill, and you're at the bottom of the hill. I have never forgotten those words, the tone, and this guy yelling, barking out at you these words. This is where we are now. That's a vision that these trainers have of what the military experience should be. And what their job was to strip us of our identity, our values, our beliefs, everything, and reinstill in us the government's values. You know, this notion of GI. GI stands for government issue. We were to become government issue at the end of this 8 week period. This same mentality, this same vision is at work now in this war on public education. Teachers, future teachers are being turned into GIs, government issue. In this case, the power elite issues. Their job is to come into the classroom and take the kids, be it preschool or PhD level students, and turn them into future issues, government issues or corporate issues today. And it's that same model of shit flowing downhill. Then the kids will come out as the equivalent of the GI or corporate issue, the CI. They in turn will produce children that they will fashion in this CI system that will come to schools and start that whole process all over again. Is that your vision? Is that the vision that you signed up for as a parent, as a teacher? Do you have a vision? Can you fashion a vision? Can you get with others and fashion a vision that becomes a shared vision? And I tell you this, if we had a shared vision back in 2002, when No Child Left Behind became the law, and when this became a formal war on public education, we would have been able to stand up. I think back then there was something like maybe close to 10 million teachers in the union. And that thing that I'm always talking about, 10 million teachers, they have husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriends, what have you. They have parents. They have sisters, brothers, cousins, uncles, nieces. They have neighbors, former teachers, former students. If we had a shared vision, and if the public was part of making that vision, we could have easily, and I'm using the word easily, stood up and said, hell no, to the privatization of public education and to the shit flowing downhill from the image and the vision that those who now have control of the fate of public education. Because we didn't have a vision, and this is my argument, if because we didn't have a vision, a shared vision, we find ourselves in the spot that we're in. I would love to see some comments on terms of your vision. What do you think about what I've been saying for this last hour about the need for a shared vision and the power of such a vision? It was a challenge that I put out Thursday in terms of our promotion. It's a challenge I'm putting out now. And it's a challenge that if we don't stand up to, we won't have an opportunity to do so in the near future as well as the distant future. With that, folks, my time is up. I hope you are reflecting on what I've talked about. Have a good rest of this Sunday, and see you next week. Thank you.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.